You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
On the north side of Chicago, something very unusual took place this week. 250 workers at Republic Doors and Windows were given 3 days' notice that their factory was closing. Contrary to federal law, they would get no severance pay. What is unusual is that the workers did not quietly walk away from their jobs, accepting the layoffs as an inevitable part of tough economic times. Instead, in direct action not seen in the U.S. since the 1930s, the workers occupied the factory, vowing to stay until their demands were met. What is more unusual is that their occupation sparked a massive solidarity movement, and the workers succeeded in forcing their employer and one of the nation's largest banks to meet their demands. The workers are members of United Electrical Radio Machine Workers of America, Local 1110. Leah Freed is a field organizer with UE Local 1110, and she joins us this morning to talk about the occupation and its significance. Greetings, Leah, and congratulations on the victory of the workers at the plant.
Well, thank you so much.
Let's talk first about what led up to the occupation. Why did Republic Doors and Windows close this plant?
Well, what workers were told last Tuesday was that the plant would be closing, the last day of work would be Friday, and that the reason they were closing is because Bank of America had decided to discontinue financing for the business. And then they also announced that Bank of America was not going to allow any expenditures that they didn't authorize, so they weren't going to be paying people their earned vacation pay or the severance owed to them under the Warren Act.
Was the company actually having a hard time?
Well, I don't think any businesses these days are making money. You know, and it's a construction product business, so they had seen a decline in, especially new construction. Here in the U.S., there's been it's been pretty hard hit with the crisis in housing. So there had been a decline in sales, but you know, this is a company that had been around for over 40 years. It had been profitable. They make a product that definitely had a future. So you know, it was pretty disturbing to us to find that Bank of America didn't want to finance it anymore. You know, everyone talks about green jobs as the saving grace of our economy and how we're going to get people working again. Well, this is a great example of green jobs. They make Energy Star windows. These are green building products. So, you know, the workers were surprised that the company was going to go out of business.
Now, there are allegations that this was a union-busting move by the owners. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, we did learn that the owner of the company, Rich Gilman, bought another factory in Iowa and was planning on basically making the same product there. So, you know, it definitely was shady. Rich Gilman is probably one of the most dishonest employers I've ever had to deal with. You know, he just wouldn't answer a direct question ever, there was massive labor law violations in the history of this plant. So, you know, it definitely, there was layers to this. It wasn't as simple as, well, they weren't making money, they had to close.
You mentioned earlier that the banks were, according to the company, not offering them any money. Now, Bank of America received $25 billion out of the government, taxpayers' money, as part of this huge bailout of financial institutions. So, what do you and what did workers make out of the refusal to extend credit from all this $25 billion they're getting themselves to Republic? What does that say about this bailout system?
Well, it's outrageous. It's outrageous that they would take $25 billion free money from regular working people paying taxes, and then turn around and refuse to extend credit and throw 300 people out of work. I think the whole point of the bailout was supposedly to get credit flowing and keep businesses open. And instead, you know, Bank of America did the opposite. And I think the support that we got also reflected a real frustration with the whole bailout package, the lack of strings attached to that money, that banks were basically just given money and told to do what they thought best with it instead of really investing in our economy. I mean, that was the point of this. So people were really angry.
Usually, I mean, in recent years, in any case, workers resort to, let's say, filing a suit or class action suit, perhaps, to get their severance pay. In this case, the workers didn't go that route at all. So how did the decision to occupy the factory as the main tactic they adopted to gain their rights, how did that decision come about?
Well, we initially actually started having conversations about what to do before we learned that the plant was going to close, because a week and a half prior to the plant closing announcement, workers had showed up on Monday morning to learn that over the weekend, a whole line of production machinery had been moved out of the plant. And so we immediately became very suspicious, started asking a lot of questions. The company really was not telling us the truth. We knew that. We actually started a surveillance of the plant. We learned that there was machinery being stored in trailers in a rail yard nearby. And so we started this conversation. And, in fact, people said, well, what are our rights under the law? And we talked about that. But really, it was pretty clear that if we let anything leave that factory, the workers were going to end up with nothing. And this is, again, a problem with what happens under the law with WARN or with bankruptcy laws, for example, because workers tend to come last in these situations. So they knew that even if they won a lawsuit, 6 months or a year down the line, there wouldn't be any money to pay them because all the windows and machinery and equipment would have been liquidated and the bank would have paid themselves. So they would have been like, oh, well, sorry, no money to pay you what you are entitled to. So we said, nothing's moving out of the plant. We're going to stay.
So most of the machinery that the company needed was still in the plant, so they would have to get the workers out. So how did the workers themselves, how did they go about organizing this? Was it one shift that started it, or was it, a meeting that they all held?
Well, what happened was this. As soon as we learned on Tuesday of last week that Bank of America had made this decision on the 2nd of December, when we learned that, we immediately organized workers. We had a big rally outside of Bank of America, and we demanded that they participate in negotiations with us over this issue, since essentially they were calling all the financial shots for the company. And enlisted the help of Congressman Luis Gutierrez here in Chicago, who was really instrumental in finally getting the bank to the table. And we supposedly were going to have a meeting on Friday afternoon, and that was the last day of work. So workers on first shift stayed. They decided to stay and await the outcome of this meeting that was set for 4 o'clock on Friday with the bank, the company, and the union. And second shift, of course, was there as well, because it was when their shift started at 2 o'clock. So when the meeting failed because the company did not show up, and workers learned of that after the committee came back to the plant, they voted unanimously to just stay. They knew that that was something they may have to do, and they saw that this was the moment to start the occupation. Immediately after voting to start the occupation, we started organizing ourselves. People started volunteering to take an 8-hour shift, so we had a 3-shift occupation operation. We also started forming committees to make sure that everything we needed was going to be taken care of, a cleanup crew, a safety crew to make sure everything was orderly and safe. And also, eventually, we had to sort of form a welcome committee because we started getting so much attention and visits from folks.
And did the company call on the police to sort of block entrance and exit, or they just stood aside on that, or the police did stand aside on that?
The police were called on Friday afternoon, but by that time, we had started getting some serious media attention, and it was, I think, obvious to the company that 200 angry workers in their factory versus a handful of management was not a situation that they were eager to get tangled in. And also, when the police came, we basically said, look, this is a peaceful situation. There's a conflict between the management and the workers. And we also enlisted the help of the local alderman to talk to the commander at the police station to explain that this was not going to escalate into violence and that there was it was a peaceful action. But essentially what happened was the company realized that if they were to try and drag people out of the factory and people weren't going to go, quietly, they were willing to get arrested and do civil disobedience. I think they realized that would just make the situation worse for them. So they, we were in control. In other words, we owned that factory. We were running the show.
And how long before the company and the bank caved?
Well, it was six days of a peaceful occupation. Negotiations started in earnest that Monday, and by Wednesday night, we had reached a deal, and 100% of the workers' demands were met. Not only did they receive all of their accrued and earned vacation pay, they also received 8 weeks of severance pay and 2 months of health insurance, which really, really will help so many people survive for the next 2 months. So it was a huge victory for the workers. But I think more than that, it became something greater than just this one struggle. It inspired a lot of people to realize that you don't have to sit back and take it, that standing up and fighting for yourself is right, and you will get support, and you can win. There is hope, and the world is what we make it.
Was there ever talk among the workers of reopening the factory and running it themselves?
Well, actually, yes. There is quite a bit of talk of what we do next. I think workers recognize that in this economy, they can't just wait around and hope that some corporations will start hiring or that to create employment, that rather workers want to initiate employment themselves, and whether it be cooperatives or some other sort of initiative to get people working again. That's what they're looking at. And actually, they started a fund called Windows of Opportunity, because it's a window factory, to look into how they can create jobs for themselves and for other unemployed workers in Chicago.
And where's the money for that fund or coming
well,
from?
Well, the union, the national union of the UE is actually going to put up some money, but also we've gotten quite a bit of donations contributed toward the struggle. And the workers, the executive board of the local, which is made up of course all the workers in the factory, has had a long discussion and said, well, people gave us this money to support a struggle, so we think we should we should use that money to continue to fight for workers, to try and see if we can reopen the factory if that's possible, and fight for employment and justice for workers.
We've been referring to them, you've been referring to them as the workers. They are the workers, but could you tell us a little bit about what where they come from, what kind of a population they are?
Sure. Well, I mean, they really reflect the city of Chicago and a lot of urban areas around the U.S., and I suppose Canada, too, probably. It's mostly people of color, about 80% Latino, 20% African-American. There's a couple of white guys and some Asian workers as well. It's diverse, and I think one of the great examples actually that came out of this is the ability of workers to overcome divisions among race or language barriers, and really work together and be in solidarity together.
You mentioned a lot of Latino workers, and of course you're probably familiar with a few years ago the occupations that took place in Argentina by mm-hmm. workers of factories. Was that in anywhere sort of in the chat that workers had among themselves, particularly having some attention? They may not have come from Argentina, but I'm just wondering whether they had themselves some sense of this as a possibility.
Well, I think going into this this occupation of the factory, taking of the factory, most of them weren't aware of what was going on in Argentina. But we received messages of support from Association of Cooperatives in Argentina. They sent us an amazing letter of solidarity. Someone donated the movie, the documentary, which is about that struggle. So a lot of workers are learning about that and have sort of been inspired by their slogan, which is Occupy, Resist, Produce. So if there wasn't a connection before, now that connection is there.
Did these workers belong to UE for quite some time, or did they are they recent members, new members of the United Electrical Workers?
They're actually fairly new members. I mean, we organized them into our union in 2004. They, I was part of the group of organizers working with the leadership in the plant to organize, and we're actually only on our second union contract, so it's a fairly new local, but it's a local that really has gone through some tremendous struggles. When they first organized with us, their fight for their first contract was very intense. They had just gone through 3 years without a raise. Most people were frozen at $8 an hour, and they got a huge, well, by U.S. standards, they got a big pay increase. They got a $1.75 raise right off the bat minimum, so they really fought hard. They have been through a lot together, and I think part of what made this occupation so successful is all the experiences they've had in the past in fighting not only their employer but trying to reach out to the community and build support there. So they were really, in a way, seasoned leaders, even though they'd only been in the union for a little over 4.5 years.
You mentioned reach out to the community, so the community was part of this struggle.
Oh, my God, that people just, the amount of support and solidarity that we received throughout the struggle was just wonderful. Every single union in Chicago came out. All sorts of community groups, worker centers were there and brought donations of food, sleeping bags for folks to spend the night on the cafeteria floor. They just came with messages of support and encouragement, and it really, really made the workers feel so strong and united and determined. So that was really critical in this victory.
Just looking at the media in the United States, did this get national coverage, or was it pretty much a local or an Illinois news story?
Oh, no. Well, it started out on Friday as being mostly local news. But by Saturday, we were getting coverage all over the country, not just in newspapers, but in television. Cable news was covering it pretty well as national network news. And it just then became an international story. We have stories that were reported on all of the world. In fact, just yesterday, a crew from the Korean broadcasting system came from Korea to interview workers and report on this struggle. So, you know, it's really captured the world's attention, which is just amazing and wonderful.
So we're in a huge crisis of the economy, of capitalism at the present time. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the significance of this struggle for the American labor movement?
Well, much like the sit-down strikes of the 1930s spurred massive organizing and resistance by workers, we're hoping that that this will also spark some organizing and some resistance by workers now, because really, unless we get organized, unless we are united and fighting for our rights, it's obvious that this economy is not working for us. So we're hopeful that people will stand up for themselves and fight for their rights, and we'll be right there with them.
Well, thanks for speaking with us. It is inspiring, and let's hope it is something that sparks others to see they have greater capacities than just conceding to the demands of big business and government. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Leah Fried. Leah is a field organizer with United Electrical Workers Local 1110, the union representing the workers at Republic Doors and Windows in Chicago.